Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of Shoeforia, the place where footwear myths are made and busted. I hope you really enjoy this episode. I've got a fantastic guest for you coming up a bit later on. Firstly, can I please remind you to subscribe to our podcast? You can do it through any of the terrific channels that are available to you. And please also don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We would really appreciate it. So today we're going to be talking about this thing that's surrounding us all right now, COVID-19. It's really disrupting our lives in a major way. And I wanted to get some insight into exactly how this would be affecting the running communities, runners, and also running retail. I guess there's been a bit of a silver lining of all of this, and that is that online sales of gym gear and running shoes are going through the roof. But the bread and butter retail stores are all closed around the world, and the challenges are gigantic. So trying to figure out exactly what the retail landscape looks like when we come out the other end is going to be very, very difficult. My special guest has some great insight into this, and I think you'll enjoy it. We're also going to look at the US Olympic Marathon trials, which were held a few short weeks ago. I think it was really interesting this year in Atlanta, Georgia, that in the men's marathon race, we saw the famous Swoosh had a clean sweep. But in the women's, it was a different story with Saucony, Hoka, Asics, and Brooks all showing very, very strongly. So today, episode 3 of Shoeforia, my special guest is none other than Mr. Jeff Dengate, the global editor-in-chief of Runner's World. Jeff is a very accomplished journalist, having previously served in senior editorial roles at Men's Journal twice. So he's sort of seesawed between Men's Journal and Runner's World, but now he's firmly entrenched at Runner's World and in command of the entire global empire. Jeff himself is a very good runner. In fact, his best time for the marathon is 2 hours and 49 minutes. And he managed to do that after having a large brisket sandwich washed down with a couple of nice cold IPAs the night before he ran his race in Chicago last year. So that's clearly the method to go fast. Jeff also told me he had another secret weapon, and that, of course, was his Nike Next Percents, which he told me are the best shoe he has ever worn. Now, keep in mind that this is a man who in 2017 ran in 285 different pairs of shoes, including 257 days wearing a different model. So we welcome Mr. Jeff Dengate, editor-in-chief of Runner's World, and I welcome you. This is Simon Bartold saying, welcome to Shoeforia, episode 3. I hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to the Shoeforia podcast by Bartold Clinical. Listen in as we delve deep into the world of evidence-based sports science, sports medicine, and athletic footwear science.
Let's go and bust some myths.
Okay, so I have with me today Mr. Jeff Dengate. He's the editor-in-chief of Runner's World globally, a man I've known for many years. I'm not quite sure when we first met, actually, Jeff. It was probably at a New York City marathon at some point in time, but it was many years ago. Jeff looks younger now and I look older, so I'm not quite sure how he's managed that, but he's talking to us from New Jersey, so I'm hoping he's staying on the right side of the Hudson River. But welcome, Jeff, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Simon.
So, Jeff, we were having a bit of a chat, and you're saying that people are still out there running and having a good time exercising. It's getting pretty crowded out there on the sidewalks, though.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a hard time because, you know, there are some people that just can't run. Their governments have banned that. Here in the States and a lot of other places, we are still able to get outside. It's one of the very few reasons we're able to go out. And I notice a lot more runners out there right now. The sidewalks are busy. Apparently, dogs have to be walked a whole lot more often now during the pandemic. You know, it's hard to keep people inside, right? And we see it from the business side, even from Runner's World. There are a lot of people interested in running right now, checking out running shoes and treadmills. And it makes sense because their gyms are closed. They can't go to CrossFit, but they can slip on a pair of trainers and go out for a couple miles and feel that rush of adrenaline, or maybe it's just their escape, right? It's their half hour to get away from the family and get away from work and any other problems. So it's a good time to be a runner.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just note that one of the industries that's really doing well is the treadmill supply companies and the gym equipment supply companies. They're doing a roaring trade online because everybody, of course, is trying to stay indoors as much as you can. And so they're selling truckloads of gym equipment, basically, which is pretty interesting. But we were having a bit of a chat before we went offline and talking about the retail scenario in footwear. What are you seeing there, Jeff?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I've been talking to a few people to figure out what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some businesses that are just going to struggle. You know, if they don't have their doors open, they still have to pay bills, they're letting staff go. That's hard for them. There are other retailers that are in a little bit better shape, and they're also still able to do online sales or local pickups. So you can order and they'll sit it outside the door when you show up. Those folks might be able to get through this time a little better. It all depends on how long it goes, but it's a tough time. And, you know, that still doesn't answer the question, what happens globally with supply chains and things like that? How does that potentially doesn't impact shoes right away, but maybe further down the line, as you know, as factories have been offline for a while, how does that affect development cycles and products we're going to see getting into stores later?
Yeah. It's quite interesting. My mate, Chris Hartner from Naperville Running in Chicago, I saw that he was doing home deliveries out of the back of his van. And I thought, geez, he's turned into Phil Knight and he's just, he's gone back to the, '60s and he's recreating the whole industry all over again. But
you think about someone like that though, when, you know, he does that in this time of need for somebody who needs a pair of shoes, he's got them for good. You've got the goodwill of the people that you've helped. It's so much more than just delivering a pair of shoes, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the guys that is just running such good operation anyway, but to be going above and beyond like that, you're absolutely correct. I think that does not go unnoticed in the community. So good on him for doing that. But yeah, I guess the guys who are well set up for e-commerce are still sort of going pretty well, but I just wonder what it's all going to look like when things do go back to normal, Jeff. I think we will see a few casualties for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a lot of industry, especially independently owned businesses. A lot of those are going to suffer. I hope not for running sake. You know, the independent retailers were already under a lot of pressure with online retail, and some were adapting to that better than others, but a lot of small shops just weren't.
You were down in Florida for the Olympic trials?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, sorry. I get my Atlanta, Georgia, and Florida mixed up being an ignorant Australian, but how was that?
It was exciting. You know, it's good to be in a big city and feel the energy that, you know, when the race is happening. There were so many people out there watching it, just a ton of energy. And then the men's and women's races being combined around the same time. It was great. There was a lot of concern about the weather. People initially early on were like, well, it could get hot in Atlanta. And it was actually, besides being windy, the temperatures were great. So spectators had a nice sunny day to stand outside and cheer on the Olympians. Now we have 6 Olympians going to the Olympics next year.
Yeah. So is that, I have been reading, there's been a little bit of toing and froing on that, a bit of controversy. Some people saying they think the trial should be rerun. That seems a little unfair. But what are your thoughts on that one?
You know, that's
controversial question.
We've picked a team, and the goal of the trials is always to pick the team that's going to represent us best at the Olympics, right? In the marathon, because you need so much recovery time, it's a tough event anyway. Maybe you don't get the fastest runners on paper, but the people who have the best day. And then they've got a long time between the trials and competition. There's a lot that could happen. And that's the same now. We just have a little bit longer period. But these runners made the team. Good on them. And if anybody's not able to perform, you know, they can back out. We have alternates. It's election process. So let's send these 6.
Yeah, that seems like the fair solution to me. I mean, I wonder about the psychological impact of being prepared for an event in July this year and peaking for that event and then having that essentially taken away from you and having to get psychologically prepared to do it a year later. It's an interesting, unprecedented sort of event, isn't it, really, that these guys have to prepare for?
Yeah, it is interesting because people have been preparing for this date, right, for a long time. And it impacts people like maybe like Abdi Rahman, who's 43 years old. He was third here in the U.S. trials. He's going to be a year older. I mean, he's ageless anyway. The guy is just amazing, but you can't discount something like that. Or what about on the women's side for women across the globe who might have been working in family planning? You know, might have been thinking, okay, this is the year I train, then I've got time to have a kid or whatever the case may be, and then come back into world championships and Olympics. And now you've got the Olympics, world championships, everything stacked year after year after year. And if this is your living, it really disrupted that work-life balance for you.
Yeah. It's just such an unprecedented thing, as I said, that, you know, we're seeing a few things cancelled. Wimbledon, of course, has been cancelled, but to cancel an Olympic Games is a pretty big deal and definitely has a lot of knock-on effect. Getting back to the Olympic trials, so we saw a couple of interesting things there in the men versus the women. So obviously we saw a clean sweep for the swoosh in the men, and we saw something very different in the women, which I personally found very interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
It was interesting. I was doing the shoe count there while I was down there. And, you know, Nike was the clear leader that day with a handful of their new super shoes, right? But the women, on the women's side, there's actually some really good support of non-Nike athletes up at the top. And we saw that, you know, and there were maybe a couple surprises. Alphine Tuliamak ran a great race. And, you know, she and her coach were probably the only ones who really going into that day said, you know, that thought that she was going to win this thing. And it was great that she executed. But yeah, so Hoka, Saucony, New Balance, you know, Asics, they all had really great days on their women's side. It's exciting to see. And the men's was just a runaway.
Yeah, I mean, there's just been so much talk about, obviously, the Alpha Fly and the Next Percent and the other shoes. You know, there's some really excellent product out there, as you know, but the other shoes have sort of been pushed into the background a bit. But I think it was a very interesting, for me, it raised a bit of a question mark about, well, how are the athletes exploiting these super shoes? And is there sort of a weight power ratio that is required to exploit the shoes? And I don't have the answer to that, but it seemed to bring it into focus with the fact that three men were wearing the Nike product and in the women that we didn't see that at all. So there may be an element of that. Got any thoughts on that one?
Then again, in Chicago, we saw the women's world record get smashed. So maybe there isn't. You know, there was a lot of factors in that day too with the course. It was a very hilly course. There were no real flat sections. So I said it when we did a course tour video. I didn't think rhythm runners were going to have a very good day on that course. I thought it was really going to reward strength runners. And, you know, so there were some people that had maybe a better chance, but also the weather played a factor in that. So, you know, maybe it was things that could have leveled it out a little bit and taken some of the shoe away. I don't know. But then again, the athletes on the women's side were wearing super shoes from their brands too. So we don't have data on those shoes yet. You know, what is the Rocket X? What is the Saucony Endorphin? Although we've seen a little bit of stuff, nothing's been really independently verified. So we don't know how they really stack up.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think it's the old chestnut that I'm quite sure when you're talking about the very pointy end of the elite athletes, those shoes are almost certainly bespoke. I'm sure they are a little, they probably have a little bit of extra magic dust sprinkled on them. So we'll never know. But yeah, so very interesting situation. But I mean, you're an interesting guy to chat to because we don't have to just talk about shoes. We can talk about running generally and some of the challenges that are facing running. Well, not challenges, but some of the trends. And, you know, you and I have been through a few trends in our years with barefoot running and, you know, looking at gait retraining and all sorts of things. What are you seeing as the sustainable trends at the moment, Jeff? What do you think are things that will go the pace or go the distance?
You know, it was a big war in foams, I thought, was happening. And that was changing the way we thought about comfort, ultimately. You know, it was okay to feel fast, but we also wanted soft. We wanted to enjoy running. Again, like our focus was coming back around to being fast, though. A lot more people were looking at running quick times than I think had been doing in the past, where it was more participation. Although it's a little bit weird because at the time, participation is dipping as, you know, people are starting to think about running faster again in races here at least. So it's going to be interesting to see how this pandemic changes a lot of that stuff and whether we think about it in the same way and how races, you know, what is the impact on races even? Do some of those survive this after having, you know, a slate of cancellations through the first half of the year too? But I think it's fun to be fast, and that's sort of where a lot of people are looking right now, running quick times again.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess I work in a broader arena in that I deal with other categories. So I work a lot in categories like football and things like that. And there's been a bit of an interesting trend that we've always had this focus on performance, and especially in running, we've looked at performance product, but there seems to be a growing interest in protection as well now. And this is especially evident in things like football, but I also see it in running, and I see it in things like the Nike Epic React, for example, where they're making substantial claims about its ability to protect from injury. Claims that I must say, when I first read them, I was somewhat skeptical, but I actually have a pair sitting in here and there are something different about that shoe. And certainly the people who are touting the figures of 52% reduction, according to their studies, it wasn't exactly an apple versus apple study, but it was an interesting study all the same. But the guys who were talking about that are people I have great respect for. And, you know, it's interesting that there's this a little bit of a shift, and it almost seems like we've split the industry or the category into either protection or speed. So there's a big focus on one or other of that. Got any thoughts on that?
I think that's fine. You know, there are a lot of people who just want to run. They don't care about being fast necessarily. They just don't want to hurt. And running can hurt, right? But as you and I know, people have been trying to change injury rates through footwear for decades, and it's not happened. Mm-hmm. That figure has not moved at all. In a very tightly controlled thing where a brand can say, okay, only run this and don't do anything more, you can make sure people don't get injured pretty easily. But anytime somebody says they got hurt wearing a shoe, the first thing I ask them is, okay, let me see your training log. Do you know how many people have ever showed me their training log?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to point out an error in your training almost always, because we're dumb animals at the end of the day. We get so excited because we signed up for a new marathon and we're going to train for it. And we go from very little running to marathon training, and it feels great for a while until it doesn't and we break. So yeah. A lot of times we just do too much too soon. And no matter what we're wearing, that's not going to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, it's a very interesting observation. I think the shoe is always a soft target, and people, you know, this always amuses me because people trot out this figure that, you know, shoes have supposedly changed a lot in the last 30 years, but the injury stats haven't. But what they're forgetting is that, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but this would be pretty close. I think that the average marathon time, in other words, if you took everybody who runs a marathon and you average the time back in the early 80s, it was something like 3 hours 20. It's something like 4 hours 40 now. And you've got people who are running for all sorts of reasons, and for the most part, a lot of them aren't actually running. A lot of them are half running, half walking. So the actual running population demographic is completely different. So it's impossible to look at injury data and actually draw too much meaningful out of that. So I think that's something that people need to remember when they're looking at all this. Where's it all going to go, Jeff, with footwear? Well, put on your magic hat and tell me what's going to happen.
There was so much criticism with that, with the Alpha Fly and the Vapor Fly, and where World Athletics was going to rule, and was it permissible and was it not. Whether you like the rule or not, at least there's some kind of guideline there to sort of slow the arms race a little bit. Do people catch up? You and I know every brand is working on a competitive product and trying to get something out there. I've been in a lot of them, and some are not even close and some are pretty good. Mm. So that's going to be exciting. But, you know, even if you look at all the shoes, all the 4% and Next percents and Alpha Flies that Nike sold and the competitive products that people are going to sell, it's still a fraction of the number of runners out there. We talk about, in the US alone, there are like 45 million people that say they're runners, that do run. That's a lot of shoes out there, and Nike's not selling 45 million pairs of Next percents. So there are a lot of people that really just don't care about running fast, and that's fine. And that actually excites me more than PRs and performances, because I want people to be out there moving and healthy. I mean, if you look at the health crisis we have, it's not good. There are a lot of very easily preventable diseases that, you know, we could take care of just by people getting out the door and moving for a half hour a day. And you mentioned with the marathon time slowing down and people maybe not even running all that. That's fine. If people are out there running and walking in a mix of it for, you know, 5 days a week, 30 minutes a day, they're going to be so much more healthy than, you know, if they're not doing that. So the more people that can be out there, the better. I'm going to kind of go on a little bit of a tangent and say the one thing that I'm sort of a skeptic about with the performance and times too is the shoes have given a little bit of cover and taken some heat off doping. We don't talk about that anymore, right? It's every once in a while you'll get a bust, but now all of a sudden the attribution for the performance gains is all what shoe were they wearing. It's not what might they be on. And I'm a little bit of a cynic because I'm not quite sure that the sport is clean. In fact, I think it's the opposite. There's a lot of really dirty athletes still that, you know, or people that are pushing the edge as far as they can, and that's not being talked about anymore. So until we can sort of figure all that out and let it settle, it's kind of hard to really be a fan of the sport without being a little bit skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, really good point. I had a chat with Alex Hutchinson about this exact same thing only a week or so ago, and you know, it's such a shame because probably one of the greatest athletic performances I ever saw was Ben Johnson in Seoul in the 100 meters. Oh, and I looked at that and just thought, I'm not sure I'm ever going to see anything better than that. And then, you know, an hour later, he's busted. And I thought, oh, God, you know, what a pity. And unfortunately, you look at every superb performance through those glasses now, don't you? But your point about this is very interesting. You know, Alex was telling me about an athlete he was aware of who was, you know, maybe a 2 hour 14 marathoner, and he just knocked out something like a 204 wearing the magic shoes. And, you know, you got to look at that and say, well, that is not the shoe and it's not the training. It can't possibly be. It's like watching Floyd Landers, you know, go up the mountain the day after he could barely ride on the level, you know, and you know, well, something's happening here and it can't possibly be legit. So I'm quite sure there are still some performances that are not kosher, and it's being masked to a certain degree by the shoes, which is a very interesting situation. Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
What's the best shoe you've run in the last 12 months?
It's the Nike Vaporfly Next percent. It's the best shoe I've run in, period, for pure speed. Yeah. The, you know, fastest shoe out there. Nothing's touched it yet. And I haven't been in the Alpha Fly. And I've heard mixed reviews on it. Some people like it, some people don't. The feeling is different. I'm excited for us to get in and test those. But, you know, I will say with the Vaporfly Next percent, the one thing I do like about it, and sure, it is fast. The first time I ran in it, I came back and I was like, boy, that thing's cheating. I said it to my buddy I was running with at the time. It's just got this spring, like the sensation that you get that it's just propelling you forward. And whatever that comes from and, you know, how we measure that and whether it's permissible or not, you know, every shoe is a spring to a degree and does have some performance gain, whether we like it or not. And is this one just that much more better? But I will say what happened with that shoe when I got it and I tried it, I hadn't been racing marathons in a long time. I'd been enjoying them. I'd run some, I'd been running some shorter distances, but I got excited to try to train for a marathon again. And so I busted my tail and I was running 90 miles a week for a while last summer through the heat, running 2 and 3 times a day. I trained like I hadn't trained before and I pulled it all together. And the day in Chicago got absolutely perfect weather. I wasn't sick. I felt great. I was ready. All the training paid off and I ran a PR. But those shoes gave me a promise when I took them out of the box and jogged them for the first time. I thought, man, maybe I can do something special here. And had I not had that, had I just had another pair of shoes that I liked and I thought were quick, would I have continued with that sense of urgency? You know, I didn't want to waste a single workout. I was like, this is the time. I've got these shoes. I want to take advantage of this. I wonder if that also sort of factors into what's happening with, you know, your everyday runner who's maybe not that tip of the spear, but people a little further back who are making some pretty big gains. Sure, there's something to attribute to that shoe, but we're showing up readier than we ever have been.
Yeah. What was your time, Jeff?
I ran 2:49.
And what was your previous best?
2:54.
Oh, you're on the EPO, man, for sure.
I was eating meat. It was a meat diet.
Oh, that was fantastic effort. I mean, that's pretty quick. Good going. I mean, that's the placebo effect, isn't it? And I sort of in my, unfortunately, I lie in bed and think about this stuff at nighttime. But, you know, so basically, I think if you get given something, a pill or whatever it might be, and said, this is going to make you 4% more energy efficient, you're probably going to believe that. And yours is a very interesting story because you've actually looked at the shoe and thought, not only am I going to believe the shoe is going to do something for me, but I'm also going to go really hard on the training side of it. And that folds into the discussion, this quite important thing that we shouldn't be at the elite level. We should trust they're clean and we should applaud the performance if we possibly can. It's never going to be just the shoe. And it's never going to be just the shoe. But yeah, the placebo side of it, I think, is really interesting also. Yeah. So, have you seen anything coming? Well, first of all, I have to ask you, how's my old mate Martin Short?
We are working with Penn State right now. So they're just kind of down the road from us a bit with their biomechanics folks to do some of the testing. And then, you know, we'll bring it in-house. So Martin was great partner with us for about a decade. And, you know, I always enjoyed the time spending with him in the lab and really getting the insight into the business.
Yeah. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Martin Shorten's a doyen of the world of biomechanics, spent many years with Nike and then went over and did all the shoe testing at his biomechanics lab in Portland. I did actually know that story, Jeff. You told me that. I think the last time I saw you was probably in New York in 2018. And indeed, we were at a party in the Hearst building. Very nice. And you told me that was all happening. So I had actually forgotten about that. Okay. So we've talked about the Vaporfly with the Next Percent, the Alphafly. Is there one particular shoe that is exciting you at the moment that you see has some real potential to compete there?
You know, so we've been testing the Saucony Endorphin Pro and Speed, and they have another version, the Shift. And I think as far as competitors, you know, I should caveat that with saying we haven't seen what ASICS has. We haven't seen Adidas' shoe. We haven't seen New Balance's Elite shoe yet. So we don't know what those are going to be, but the closest thing we've seen so far is coming from Saucony. And it's interesting because their Elite version is $200. Versus $250 or $275 for the Nike competitive product. And if the fit is different and you like it, you know, that trade-off between whatever percentage gain you might get from one versus the other might be enough for some people to say, okay, I'm going to spend $200 on this shoe. But they built another shoe called the Speed, Endorphin Speed. It's only $160. It uses the same midsole, same outsole. It has a nylon plate instead of carbon fiber. The upper is a little bit different, but it's still really lightweight. And I've been running in both, and I swear to you, I like the Speed better. I think the Speed feels a little softer under my foot, but doesn't feel any slower at all.
Has it got a carbon plate, Jeff?
This one has a nylon plate. So that's
nylon.
It feels every bit as fast. And I was running this goofy little thing. I ran 24 miles in 24 hours, doing 1 mile every hour. And I was running it pretty hard. And in back-to-back miles, I went right around 5:30 in both shoes. And I wore the Speed, I think, on the second one. And it's a lot of fun at a quick pace. So I think for $160, I think Saucony's going to sell a boatload of those shoes if, you know, we ever get them out, if they ever get out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting observation. I mean, I may be wrong, but from what I hear, I don't think ASICS has gone down the carbon fiber plate path. I think all of their shoes aimed at the elites will have a nylon plate or will have a different method of stiffening. So we may well see the situation. I mean, the really interesting thing here is that the WA ruling compelled all companies to get their product out by the end of this month. But all of that's changed now because the Olympics has been cancelled. So I'm guessing they're all going, yippee, we've got another year to develop our product and get it all ready for.
They have another month or two, because if they want to have any prototypes or any shoes in the fall marathon season, they've got to have them out. So by September 15th or September 14th, backtrack that 4 months, that means middle of May, those shoes have to be out, which puts people in a tough spot where their athletes can't wear those in Boston, Chicago, London, you know, if they don't get on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for the majors, they're still going to have to abide by that. But for the Olympics next year, for the Olympic marathon next year, all bets are off, really.
Yep.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens, you know. And so I guess what's happened is there was a bit of a ceasefire, but I suspect the arms races were truly back on now with the big five or the big six now.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. Okay, we'll keep an eye on Saucony and see what happens. I don't really have it too much more to ask you. I think we've covered everything I wanted to cover. It's very, certainly very interesting times for us all. And hopefully we come out of this fog of uncertainty fairly soon. And I particularly feel for retailer. I hope everybody's managing to somehow keep their head below the parapet and continuing with business as usual. The only thing I can say to everybody is there's no one who's not been touched by all of this. It is truly very global. So thank you very much, Jeff. Keep yourself safe. Try to avoid those crowds when you're out running. And hopefully we'll see each other at some stage in the next 12 months or so. Maybe. Are you planning to go to the Olympics at all?
We'll see how that works out. You know, we've got a year to figure out what's going to happen. I know we'll be covering it for sure. And who we send, we'll find out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm hoping to get there myself, but we'll see what happens. Okay, Jeff Dengate, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and some very interesting insights there into the industry. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for joining us for the Shoeforia podcast by Bartold Clinical. Join us next time.